This is your host, Mark McNeese, and you're listening to Your Right Path, a podcast about all things writing. Join me for conversations and interviews with authors, journal keepers, autobiographers, workshop facilitators, and more. Every life is a story, and each of us is the storyteller. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. This is your host, Mark McNeese, and today I am very happy to be talking to someone who is an author and a clinical psychologist and, truth be known, a friend for quite some time. His name is Lenny Gallo. He's a writer, artist, and clinical social worker. His artwork has been featured in galleries worldwide, and his essays and articles have been featured in professional journals and trade papers. In addition to his art and writing, Lenny works as a therapist, specializing in the treatment of OCD, trauma, and anxiety disorders, which we will get into with the book. He's originally from Chicago, and he now resides in New Jersey. Lenny, how are you?
I'm good. So I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on today, Mark.
It's my pleasure. Now, I always like to let the guest talk a little bit about themselves. I call it the 411, even though I don't think there is any 411 anymore. but give us some background on you.
Sure. So, well, I think you gave me a very nice intro there. I am primarily a therapist, so my primary day job, so to speak, is helping people. I do work with anxiety disorders, OCD. Those are my two big specialties right now. In addition to that, I paint a lot. I have my art displayed in galleries worldwide. And I love theater. So there's another fun one. And I love sharks.
And your artwork is in the book.
My art is in the book. Yes, I decided for this book on Still, I wanted to incorporate the artwork from the time that the series of art at the time that I was writing the book, or at the time that the ordeal was going on.
Now, I would ask you how you ended up in New Jersey from Chicago, but it's all in the book, and it's fairly extensive because you went back and forth a couple times.
I did. Early on, I wasn't quite sure I was ready to take on New York. I think coming from Chicago in a smaller market, New York, you think New York, it's very competitive in so many ways. And my original reason, besides my partner for coming out here, was also because of acting and my acting career. And I, if you want to be a stage actor, this is the place to do it. So my partner and my craft are what really drew me to New York. And it was a rocky start getting out here. In my younger years, I think I was just very intimidated by a lot of what I was seeing.
Well, I came here from LA, and it was a culture shock. But LA's also a really big city. It was just very, very different, and I wanted to go back for the first year. I didn't want to stay here.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
I didn't have anywhere to go back to.
Yeah.
The person I moved here was, I really couldn't go back, but I ended up loving it. Now, do you still act? Is that still part of your life?
So, not so much anymore. I hope to be on stage again soon. That's kind of my next goal in life. But as I'm sure we'll talk about with the book, acting has been a bit of a challenge these days, just from a health standpoint.
I can understand. And we're going to get into the book now. The title is Unstill, The Ordeal of Anxiety Pills and an Undiagnosed Disorder. It's a memoir. You're the author, but it's also, you've also got listed Sandra Beaulieu.
Yep.
As an editor, and Don Weiss as an editor, and Louise D. Stahl as an editor.
Yes.
The book deals with the treatment for anxiety that is all too often inclusive of medication, but at what cost to the patient. And before we get right into it, it struck me because we see ads on the TV all the time for drugs.
Yes.
And then they'll very quickly go through some list of side effects that are like 50 side effects. Mm-hmm. And some of them fatal, some of them horrible. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the people in the commercial are dancing. They're always dancing in drug commercials because they're super happy to be taking something that could completely alter their lives in not in a good way. And so we're going to talk about that. I thought it was an unflinching book. I mean, it's really kind of harrowing, Lenny. I don't know. That's a compliment because... Oh,
thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You know what
that.
I mean? It's like, oh my God. How does somebody live through that? You open with a startling depiction and it...
Yes.
I mean, you just go from there. Like, the breaks... There are no breaks.
I fought with my editors over that opening. Full disclosure, I don't think I'm spoiling anything in the book, but I had debated... Like, how do I want to open this? How do I want to show people what a day in the life of this is like? And so I open in a rather private place with my behind, which I thought was just fitting because for this book, because the one thing I really wanted to demonstrate throughout the book and throughout the course of writing this book is that something as minute as a fungal infection, which is where the book sort of starts out, can really sort of alter and change the course of your day, and sort of altering, you know, specifically with the condition I have, it can really sort of, you know, lead you to just places in your head, that can cause anxiety and that can, you know, just interact with some of the other medication I have to take. So that was where I was trying to kind of set up with that.
Well, I think it was the right move, honestly, because, this is not really an appropriate analogy necessarily, but people don't want to look at the consequences of war. It's like, mm-hmm. we want to pretend that, you know, it's not horrible and violent and bloody and awful. So they don't, you know, they don't show the images, and it's like, but it needs to be looked at. And I think that by choosing to open your book that way, you're saying, this is the reality,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is what happened. This is the truth. And go from there. Now, you talk about having anxiety when you were a child.
Yes.
So it's been a lifelong issue for you.
Yes. I really wanted to show people, you know, while the book is partially about my anxiety, it's also about medication-induced movement disorders, which I'll get into. But I wanted to show people what led me to a psychiatrist in the first place. And so I wanted people to get a better sense, because I think this story is so common for many people, is they feel anxiety, they feel down, they feel depressed, life might not be going the way they want it. And I really wanted to show and depict, you know, how throughout the course of, you know, time in our life, all of this stuff can just build and build and build. And as a therapist now, this is something I'm very much an advocate of. I think everybody should have a therapist, by the way. And I'm not saying that as a bias because I'm a therapist, but having tools to be able to manage some of those things early on in life. I don't think we get enough tools early on in life to deal with feelings. And so oftentimes what happens is those feelings get buried. And that was kind of what I was trying to show in the book on Still. It was very much this idea of, you know, growing up with a mother who was quite difficult, growing up with a, you know, some genetic history of anxiety. So I was predisposed to it on some level. And just showing, you know, how, you know, without some sort of guidance around this stuff, things can get out of control very quickly.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you on the benefits of therapy. I had a father who was, I didn't regret when he died. I'll just put it that way. And I ended up with a really good therapist who, good for me, you mm-hmm. know, he just helped me so much. And I saw him for a couple of years and really got to the root of some things and resolved some things. And it really turned me around and made it possible for me to move on with some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think too that certainly for the last 10, 20 years, I remember going to a psychiatrist and he really didn't do anything. He just gave me drugs.
Yeah.
And I think that's really common.
Yeah, it is. It is. Actually, today, there used to be a time when the psychiatrist did everything. There used to be a time when you would go to a psychiatrist, they would offer talk therapy. If you needed medication, they would offer medication. Medication was generally reserved for like the most severe cases. But then somewhere around 70s, 80s, we start to see this push from drug companies, you know, to sort of, you know, market meds to the more general public. Mm-hmm. And this just kind of continued to escalate and escalate and escalate. So some of those commercials you were talking about, you know, I'm not going to mention any drug names specifically, but I will say that a lot of those commercials, they will masquerade as, you know, a medication that will help you with your depression, but what they don't tell you oftentimes is that they're trying to sell you an antipsychotic. Mm-hmm. Now, we used to reserve antipsychotics for the most severe of severe cases,
right?
And today they kind of get pushed around a little bit more. I don't want to say like candy, but there's more of a push to be using these things. And they do come with pretty severe side effects. They do come with pretty severe consequences to them. And that's why we're seeing more and more cases of like movement disorders, which is what I have. Because it, you know, this used to be something, you know, back in the 50s, they used to think movement disorders because of medication were actually a symptom of the disorder. They mm-hmm. used to think it was part of like schizophrenia or something. They didn't realize the medication was actually causing this. Today we understand a little bit better.
Yeah, it just seems like every other commercial is a drug mm-hmm. commercial now. And I am not happy with that. I think it was a bad move, and it's capitalism, and it's mm-hmm. it's trying to get everybody on Prozac and all this.
Yeah.
Although that, you know, not a big thing now, but like you mentioned the 1980s, I remember a book called Prozac Nation. It was mm-hmm. Written by a woman. It was a bestseller, and like everybody was running out to get Prozac. Now we're all running, well, not you, but now we're all running out to get weight loss.
Yes, you know? Yes. And that's another reason I wanted to put this book out, because, you know, Part of my mission in writing this book was to really just, I want to make it very clear, I am not anti-medicine by any means. I think there will come a point when we all need medicine for something. I think we all have to weigh the cost and benefits of side effects, but I oftentimes don't think those side effects get discussed nearly enough when it comes to taking medication. And I don't think that doctors are oftentimes equipped to be able to go through the list of medication side effects. And, you know, in the case of myself with this book, you know, I don't want to say I wasn't warned about these side effects, but it was kind of like, oh, that's no big deal. That's no big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think it has to, people have to take a step back and say, am I willing to take the risk of, you know, potentially life damaging stuff for whatever I'm trying to treat? And if I'd known that or more about that at the time, I probably would have done things a little bit differently. Who knows? Maybe it would have still gone the same course. But I guess I should explain what it is I have.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Also, I also wanted to ask you about if it was one medication, like the genesis of it.
So, I'll start by just saying, that what I have is a medication-induced movement disorder. So the medication-induced movement disorders are basically when your body loses like voluntary function of your motor control, right? So if we look at something like Parkinson's, for example, where you start to lose control of your motor function, this is what we're seeing with like medication-induced movement disorders. And the way this works in the brain is that there's little receptors that are very close to the emotional part of your mind, or where a lot of the emotions that they're trying to work with, that happens to be the same place where a lot of like voluntary muscle control is also. So they're kind of like in the same area. So when we mess around in that area, that's when we start to see things like these movement disorders develop. So the two big names that, you know, people may have heard of at least one of these, tardive dyskinesia, which is the one that's gaining a little bit more attention now. And to me, the more torturous one, which is akathisia. And these are both induced by the use of psychotropic medication. And so we don't know who will get these disorders. There's no like test you can get. There's no genetic testing or any sort of thing that we can use to sort of see who will and who won't get these disorders. But what happens is if you're on these medications, and this is varied for, you know, different people. Some people can get these conditions after being on the pills a very short amount of time. Some people can get these after being on the pills a very long time. We used to think these disorders were reserved to people who had been on the medication for many, many years. But what we're finding today is that people can be on the medications for a very short amount of times and end up with a movement disorder. And when I say a movement disorder with this, it's literally this inability to sit still. It's literally like you've drank 50 cups of coffee. You cannot sit still. And I've always thought it's a very hard concept to explain to people, because I think the idea to be able to sit still is something we take for granted, because mm-hmm. you don't think about this idea of, oh, my legs can't stop moving. I really wanted to hone in on that point in my book of the torture people go through with this. And it is a very terrifying experience to lose control of your body and to not be able to sit still. These disorders can, generally speaking, they're supposed to only last like a couple of weeks in people, you know, but for some, as was the case with myself, they can go on for many, many years, even after the medication is removed. So once you even remove the medication, you can get longer term tardive. Tardive really just means delayed in onset, and chronic, meaning that it's, you know, continuous. So tardive dyskinesia, tardive akathisia, these are delayed in onset, meaning it could be upwards of a year of being off the medication, and then all of a sudden your body just develops a movement disorder. I should also say that this isn't just limited to mental health meds. We know that there are certain stomach pills that can cause this. There are certain heart medications that have also been linked to some movement disorders and medication. And so I really wanted to educate the public on this point. And as was the case for me, it wasn't just so much about one pill. So for anyone who's been to a psychiatrist for anxiety, depression, you oftentimes have to try a handful of meds before you can find something that may or may not work for you. And it was kind of that trial and error process that I think ultimately led up to this for me, in addition to a stomach pill that I was taking at the time, which the stomach pill was not marketed as an antipsychotic, but it has a lot of the same properties of an antipsychotic medication. And so it was kind of doing the same thing to my brain. So between the stomach medication and the trial of some of these medications is probably what ultimately set this disorder off in myself.
Now, how is it now?
I'll just say, in its early and acute phases, it literally feels like all you want to do is jump out of your skin. It literally feels like you want to rip your skin off. There are reports of people who have committed suicide. There are reports of people who have literally like just jumped in front of trains because it was just too torturous for them. I can certainly sympathize and relate to those feelings, as I went through this experience. I'm in a much more wax and wane sort of phase of this disorder now, where there will be days that are difficult, and there will certainly be days where it's a little bit more challenging, but it kind of goes through this waxing and waning phase and eventually starts to slow down a bit. So if you were to see me today, you'd probably think nothing was wrong. Generally speaking, it's under control. I can tell you there's certain things that will set it off in me. There's certain, whether I have to take a medication, certain foods set it off in me, activities or exercise will set it off in me. And so I've got to be very mindful about everything that goes into my body.
Is it in the brain? It has to be chemical, but where's it coming from in your body?
So it's definitely in the brain. It's a very, so we're looking at things that are very microscopic. So this is happening at a receptor level, and it's very hard to get imaging at the receptor level. So this is why we can't kind of see these things like on traditional, you know, imaging scans and things like that. So what happens is the brain basically, this is the theory that's the, you know, the one we have right now for what's happening specifically with tardive dyskinesia, is when you put medication that blocks dopamine in your body, is for some people, this is not for everybody, but for some people, the brain can create extra receptors to sort of compensate for that. And if you remove the medication, what ends up happening is you have all these extra receptors that have nothing to connect to. And so that's what's ultimately creating these extra movements in the body. Now, the theory is that over time, these receptors will slowly die out. And they do. I can attest for myself that they do die out. For other patients as well, I know that they have died out. But it's a quite lengthy process, and there's not much that can be done in the way of treatment. You know, there's very little treatment options for this. A lot of the options are kind of watching and waiting. And I think that's the hardest thing to tell someone, because we're not sure if this is going to last, you know, 2 days or if it's going to last for a lifetime. And I consider myself very fortunate that this condition could be way worse for me on so many levels. Because there, I've talked with plenty of individuals who, for them, they've never really gotten out of the acute phase of the disorder, and so they are constantly stuck in this acute phase of disorder. Just to give you an idea of how torturous this can be, I once talked with a woman who said, "If I had a choice between cancer and this, I would take cancer."
Wow.
And I have actually read stories of people who have withdrawn cancer treatment because they just didn't want to put themselves through any more torture with medications. So this is something that can really hit at a very visceral level, this inability to sort of sit still. Because just imagine for days on end, your body cannot sleep, your body cannot sit down. All you want to do is go to bed, and you can't.
How has it affected the people in your life?
So I talk a lot about this in my book. You know, at the time when this was at its worst, my partner Scott, who really was a godsend on so many levels, he really was my rock, because he was the only person who was able to see this from its very like origins and beginning into what it's become. And so, you know, I couldn't ask for a better partner in life. But, you know, he really took action. He really advocated for me. I certainly know that it took its toll on him. At the time, my friends a lot of my friends were in Chicago, so they were very removed from a lot of this stuff. And the friends that I did have out here, they understood it to some degree, but Scott, my partner, was the one who really saw this and who really kind of was the one who guided me through this. I know he said he's told me he would do it all over again if he had to, and that means the world to me. I think it also forced us as a couple to kind of, you know, just really re-examine what does it mean to be in love, and what does it mean to be there for someone in their time of need. So this experience just forced me to reflect on so many things going on in my life. But I will say that you know, as with most people who go through any sort of serious medical conditions, and I've heard this from numerous people with various disorders, you find out who your real friends are. Mm-hmm. You find out who your real family is, and you find out the people who will really be there in your time of need. And I think that was so true for me as I was going through this experience, because the surprises from people I would have never thought would have been there, and the people who I expected to be there who weren't.
Well, that leads me to my next question. I've just got a couple more. It has to do with being believed by doctors, but I can also extend to other people, because this sort of thing sounds like some people are going to go, well, Lenny, you're just imagining it. And how did you deal with, because I've had this with things too, nothing anywhere near that severe, but trying to get a doc explain something, a symptom to a doctor, and maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe you have restless leg syndrome. Yesterday I saw my doctor just briefly, and I really like him. I like my doctor a lot, but I've been taking Ropinirole, which is for, well, Parkinson's, but it's very low dose for restless leg syndrome. Mm-hmm. And he goes, who told you you had restless leg syndrome? And I said, you did. And he said, I never said that. You said you had trouble sleeping. Whatever, whatever. It's okay. But that's, I mean, that's not even really a comparison. But you have, I know you went to doctors who probably didn't believe you. And can you talk about that?
Sure, sure. This makes up a big portion of my book. And still, it was very important to me to kind of to demonstrate that point, because I think had I had doctors who listened to me sooner in the process, that this may not have invaded as much of my life as it has. There came a point when I really did stop trusting doctors, and that doctors would be the ones who would help me through this, because, you know, when you go to doctors and they say things like, this is all in your head, this is all your anxiety, and this is a hard one too, because for people who have anxiety, yes, we have anxiety, but we also know when there's something going on in our body that's not right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it almost forced me to shut down on some level. There were plenty of moments when I wanted to give up and just say the hell with doctors altogether. But, you know, luckily I had supportive friends to kind of help me through this and to say, okay, you know what, let's find the doctor who's going to understand this. And, you know, I knew from the research I had done online at the time that this was something that existed. So I knew this wasn't something that was made up, although a lot of doctors did tell me they thought this was in my head. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, finally finding, and I got very fortunate to find a doctor or two that really kind of said, oh yeah, this is actually a thing. And, you know, keep in mind, back in, you know, not that long ago, we're talking like 2013, there was even less information on these conditions at the time. And so finding a doctor who could even understand it was very troublesome. So I lost a lot of faith in the medical system, and I, to some degree still, I'd be lying if I said that I trust doctors to this day. You know, I have found the doctors, I put them through a grueling test. I put them through my grueling test to see how they're going to work with me. And I think more people need to do this. I think more people need to be their own patient advocate, because the way the medical system is right now and healthcare is right now, doctors are overwhelmed. They don't have time for people. They don't have time to, you know, you get your 15 minutes and that's it. Yeah. And we need to be our own patient advocates. We need to be coming in there with the research. And, you know, just for your listeners and for anybody, it is very important to go in there with the same data they have so that you can be as educated as they are on this stuff, because that way they know you're not bullshitting. Doctors like to look at facts. They like to look at their research. They like to look at studies. They like to see what the trends are. And if you can't bring them something that shows them that, then you can be labeled crazy. So I wanted to just, and that's what I was doing with a lot of my doctors. One of my doctors actually said, he's like, I think you can get an honorary doctorate in movement disorders with the information you have, because I made it my mission to research everything I could find online about this so that I could go into these doctors and say, hey, listen, this is what's going on. And unfortunately, you know, that shouldn't be the patient's responsibility, but unfortunately it's become the patient's responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so I just advocate for that with all patients now. You know, simple things like that, just knowing the medications you're on, knowing what they do. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to who just don't even know what they're taking. They just take a pill because the doctor told them to. Mm-hmm. And I think there's where we run into a bit of a problem, and people can then all of a sudden wind up with things that they just can really be life-changing.
I want to talk a little bit about support. Your book, I think, is a wonderful resource. And you've talked to a lot of other people. I think you mentioned a Facebook group, but what sort of support is there out there for people who are experiencing this?
So, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I was hoping this book would be a sense of comfort for people, and I was hoping that this would be a something people could look at, you know, to say you're not alone, you're not crazy. With regards to support, there still are very few organizations out there. They're more grassroots organizations. I can tell you there's one really great organization, the Akathisia Alliance. They do a lot of great work to advocate for this disorder. They also do a lot to help educate on this disorder. You know, that would be one of the first places I would, you know, tell people to turn, because they've got a lot of, you know, they're always trying to keep up with the latest data, research, things of that nature. They are a wonderful advocacy group. Facebook, believe it or not, has been a wonderful resource for a lot of people, because there are tons of support groups now. If you just type in tardive dyskinesia or akathisia into Facebook, there will be dozens and dozens and dozens of groups now that pop up. And so it's through these communities where people are able to share information that this information gets passed along. There's other organizations like MIST. They do a lot of advocacy work. They do a lot of educational work. They even offer a CEU class for doctors, for you know, clinicians. I'm a big advocate of that, very big advocate of doctors, clinicians, people educating themselves on this disorder, because, you know, I kind of compare this to, like, there was a time when people didn't know as much about autism, you know, and so, you know, like, you know, police officers would go to someone's house and they didn't know the person was autistic. And, you know, now we have a better understanding of, oh, okay, this is what autism is. Still work to be done on that part. But we need more education in these departments. And so I know a lot of these organizations are advocating for education among doctors, education among, you know, just lay people, so that people can be really well informed. Over in Europe, there's wonderful organizations as well. Stephen's Voice is a great organization, you know, just putting out information as it becomes available. So tons, a quick Facebook search these days will get you to a lot of support that you can use.
Excellent. Now, Lenny, I want to thank you for talking to me. It's an intense book. I mean that in a good way. I really liked it, and I think you're doing a great service by sharing your experience with people. I'll give you the last word if you have any.
Yes, I'll say this. You know, part of why I wrote this book was I really want people to be their own patient advocates. So please advocate for yourself as a patient, and don't be afraid to walk out of a doctor's office if they're not giving you what you need. And I will just say that, you know, please understand the medications you're putting into your body. Again, I'm not anti-medication. I know we all need medication at some point, but do your due diligence. You know, I think just those simple things of doing your due diligence to understand what the side effects are and to really weigh that out against what it is you're trying to treat can help you make a more informed decision about things before, you know, it's too late. You know, a lot of this stuff that I have going on and a lot of the things that I talk about and instill, a lot of this could have been prevented if there was just more information. And so that's why I'm a big advocate for education and not just with this, with the weight loss pills, with the or injections, things like that. Please educate yourself on this, because others may not, and that's when problems start to happen.
Yeah, there's a whole another conversation to have. Anyways, everybody, the book is Unstill, The Ordeal of Anxiety Pills and an Undiagnosed Disorder. It's a memoir. The author is Lenny Gallo. I highly recommend this, and I wish you the absolute best, not only with success with the book, but in reaching people, because, like you said, there have to be so many people out there struggling and not knowing what to do or where to turn. And I think you've done just a wonderful outreach here with your book.
Thank you so much, Merk. I really appreciate that. And it's you can go to my website, LennyGallo.com, for more information on the book. And or it's available on Amazon, Audible, all that fun stuff.
Great. Now you have a good day, Lenny. It was nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Your Right Path with host Merk McNeese. Enjoy conversations and interviews with writers about writing. And be sure to check out everything I do at yourrightpath.com.